Today, I will be speaking to former mayor of the city of Toronto, David Miller, who is joining us today to talk about a program that he was very, very influential in getting going here, and I think is one of the hallmarks of his mayorship, which would be Mayor's Tower Renewal Program. Welcome to the Green Majority, David Miller.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be on. By way of background, at the city, we were very much interested in environmental opportunities, but we didn't just want to see them as environmental. We tried to find opportunities to lower impact on the planet, to fight climate change, to help clean water, and to help make the city greener, that also had an impact positively on our economy and also had an impact on social justice and equality. So it's in that sort of context that Tower Renewal came about. Quite simply, Tower Renewal is about reskinning concrete apartment buildings built in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. So reskinning means you add a probably aluminum layer on the outside, and it allows you to insulate these buildings. And the reason that's important, and by the way, I should give credit where it's due. This the work for this came from U of T, first of all, from the engineering faculty, who were looking at environmental issues, how do we lower energy consumption, how do we reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and then from the architecture faculty, and then was brought to us. And when we reskin a building and insulate it, you can quite dramatically lower the energy consumption of these buildings. And that's important because in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, the federal government, through the Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation, had a strategy to address housing needs by building concrete apartment buildings. And there's two qualities of these buildings. The concrete apartment buildings that we have all over Canada, there's about 1,000 in Toronto, there's many more across the country, will be here essentially forever. You know, they're made out of concrete. Their lifetime expected life is at least 100 years. It's probably much longer. They'll be here forever. That's the first quality. The second is that concrete has no insulating power. So they're terrible wasters of energy. A one-bedroom apartment, for example, uses more energy to heat and cool than a small house, which doesn't always make sense to people, but that's the fact. So what U of T determined was that if you put insulation on the outside of these buildings with an aluminum skin over it, you could reduce energy consumption by Toronto as a whole by about 5%. That's how wasteful these buildings are. And that would reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by an equivalent amount. So that's almost the first target from Kyoto, just by insulating these buildings. So that's fantastic on its own from an environmental perspective, but it's also important from an economic and social justice perspective, because many of these buildings are in lower income neighborhoods. They need renewal. There are opportunities for jobs for local people. We are working with the unions to train local people on the new skills so that people in a neighborhood would have a first chance at the jobs. And there were other aspects of it that helped renew neighborhoods. But it started with a very simple academic environmental idea. Let's reduce greenhouse gas emissions by insulating buildings in a very cost-effective way, about a 7 to 10 year payback. And then it moved into a way to rejuvenate neighborhoods. And I think that's why it's an exciting program, because it does both.
Mm-hmm. And so the original stakeholders here, obviously, you're talking about refurbishing and upgrading buildings to be more energy efficient, less waste. But just before we get onto the kind of specifics of beyond the actual cladding on the outside of the building, some of the other things that are being done here, who's the main stakeholder? Are these buildings are owned by the public? Are these private buildings and you're working with private owners?
Well, there's different stakeholders. I mean, first of all, many of the buildings are private. Some are public, owned by Toronto Community Housing Company, but the vast majority are private, and there are different kinds of landlords in Toronto. There are big national companies, there are medium-sized companies, and then there are people who might own one or two buildings. So one of the things we tried to do with Tower Renewal was involve at the pilot stage all of those entities, big national companies, medium-sized companies, family-owned businesses, and Toronto Community Housing. Landlords aren't the only stakeholder, of course, though. The people who live in the buildings are very important stakeholders as well. And one of the features of Mayor's Tower Renewal is a really extensive engagement program with the people who live in the building, because when you're renewing them, there are other things that you can do. For example, these buildings often have a lot of green space around them that's private green space, but perhaps might be underutilized. Maybe they built a pool with the buildings originally but can't afford to run it. And the people in the building might have some very specific ideas of what they want. You know, do they want a children's playground? Do they want the ground floor of the building to be rezoned commercial because there's entrepreneurs in the building who want to create a business? Do they want the green space to be allowed to have a small urban farm or allotment gardens? You know, whatever, it's up to them. And so they're an important stakeholder as well, not just the owners, but also the residents.
Something we've covered on this program many, many times is there's certainly no lack of good environmental thinkers making good suggestions on a wide variety of issues. One of the things that when it comes down to that we found again and again that sort of slows down or stops this sort of idea, this sort of program that kind of improves efficiency or environmental initiatives of any kind, is that there's not an incentive for someone along the chain to do it, and therefore that unfortunately slows down or stops a lot of the progress that can be made. So the reason I was asking you about the sort of ownership and working with a variety of private owners is, what sort of ways have you found to, I mean, if it was in their financial interests on their own to do these sorts of things, you would imagine that they would have sort of done it without the government program or without, you know, Mayor's Tower Renewal Program. So what sort of ways have you found to be able to work with private owners to encourage them to actually want to participate with these sorts of projects?
Yeah, the market will not do these projects on its own. And it's for a very simple reason. The projects are economic. The payback, depending on the price of energy, is between 7 and 10 years. But it's a really, that's a pretty quick payback for a building that's has a lifetime of 100 years. And the public sector is quite prepared to do it because of the way their finances work. It makes sense to spend some money, and for the next next 7 years, you're paying back your expense, and then for the 90 years after that, you're reducing costs. I mean, it's a very simple proposition for the public sector. Private sector, though, has a different economic equation. And for the kind of budgets that they use for this sort of work, private sector landlords want a 2 or 3 year payback. Maybe one who's really progressive and environmental would do it if there was a 4 year payback, but it's for reasons of interest cost, ease of security, all sorts of reasons. So the private sector won't do it on its own. The market doesn't create that outcome. So what we've tried to do by working, as I said, on I think it's 9 pilot sites, is work with the private sector as well as the tenants to create ways that it becomes economic for the private sector. And there are some things we know that would help. In Melbourne, Australia, they have a program. It's directed at commercial buildings, but they use a mechanism that would help here, which is the state there passed a regulation that allows, if you're doing an energy retrofit, the costs of the retrofit are repayable as if they were property taxes. So that means it's very simple from a paperwork perspective. And it's sort of like what they call in the States PACE bonds, although that in the end had some obstacles placed in its way. But it's a very simple idea and a simple way of mobilizing the capital to do it. So we asked the province of Ontario to pass that regulation. They haven't yet. But something like that will bring the private sector and the public sector together. There's a market imperfection here that doesn't allow for the savings payback to be fast enough for the private sector to do it. And what the city's trying to do through these pilot projects is find ways that they can make it very simple, and it can be replicated on hundreds and hundreds of buildings. If there's 1,000 of these buildings in Toronto, there's probably 4,000 across Canada. And so that creates a huge market for the technology needed, the skills, huge economic opportunities, obviously massive greenhouse gas reductions. And if we can create a model that's simple and can be replicated across all those buildings, we can make it happen.
How exportable, based on your experience, are these types of ideas? I mean, you were talking about some of the issues are with that the private sector system isn't set up to kind of mesh automatically, and so you had to create a program to kind of get private sector on board. Is this an issue that's Toronto-centric? Is this something that's easily exportable to the rest of the Canada or to the rest of the world?
The idea is very exportable. In every place, there'll be a local wrinkle that needs to get sorted out, but the idea is universal. And as chair of the C40 group of cities who are leading cities of the world, leading the fight against climate change, and we also add business missions to various cities. And it's called Mayor's Tower Renewal, not because David Miller brought it forward as mayor to the city of Toronto, because we want mayors of every city in the world to adopt this kind of idea. So we have a sister city relationship with Chongqing, China, which is a small city of about 35 million people. You know, it's a city the size of Canada. They have numerous concrete buildings. Their issues are a bit different than ours. It's more about heating than cooling, or sorry, cooling than heating. But the same principle applies. And we brought the architects involved with this with us on the business mission. They gave a seminar in Chongqing to about 200 architects and engineers, and then were asked to do another one in Toronto, where Chongqing sent over about another, I think somewhere between 50 and 100 architects and engineers to Toronto to learn about tower renewal. So the idea makes sense anywhere concrete was used to build apartment buildings, and that was very typical in many cities in the world in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And there was a big push on for housing post-war. And the policies that supported the creation of these buildings, really the thinking was really started post-war. Now, in every jurisdiction, there's an issue about financing. And different places can have different solutions. But the program itself and the benefits of community engagement, of turning green space into something more useful to the community than underutilized passive green space, even creating a park is better than having a rusting chain link fence around an area that nobody uses. In fact, creating a park is fantastic. Maybe that's what you want to do. And rezoning the base of these buildings for commercial, all of those ideas are translatable everywhere. And I've had conversations with many mayors around the world. And in my role now as an advisor to the World Bank, the OECD, and others, the issue of buildings is forefront. And it's for a simple reason. If we want to overcome the challenges of climate change, the place we're going to win or lose that battle is in cities. Depending on whose figures you accept, up to 80% of the emissions can be credited to cities. And in most cities in the world, the majority of the emissions are to do with heating and cooling buildings. So by reducing the amount of energy buildings need, you're having a dramatic impact on greenhouse gas emissions and reducing them. And of course, all these energy retrofits are very labor intensive. So at a time people need jobs, it wins on both fronts. So there's huge interest around the world. And in the United States, I've been talking to a venture capital fund who are quite interested in funding this once they can figure out exactly how to make the model simple and easily replicated in different buildings. And that's the work that's going on now, including at the City of Toronto.
So one of the other, I think, obvious questions there as well is, you know, we've got so many existing buildings, obviously the massive cities all over the planet. Toronto specifically has, you know, lots of high rises and big buildings. And I mean, we were talking mostly residential buildings, but there's also all the condos more traditional residential buildings. And then downtown, we have the huge condo boom and all the office towers and everything. So, I mean, retrofitting what we have makes a lot of sense. And obviously then tearing it down and building a new one. But that is the other side of the coin, is there still is new buildings being built all the time, and they, you know, we're still kind of at the tail end of a condo boom here in the City of Toronto and in lots of places. How do you see any options for trying to solve the problem of building badly designed, from an environmental standpoint, badly designed buildings in the first place?
Well, the first point that people need to think about is most of the buildings that will be here in 50 years have already been built. So we really have to address old buildings. That's critical, and they're not going to move. And there are other opportunities. I won't get into the details for time, but when you reskin a building, you could run the pipes up for geothermal and run it down below ground. You could use solar panels to skin the building. There's all sorts of things you can do. You could put a green roof on and have a living wall. Many, many different things. So that's what's exciting about the program, because you can really layer positive additional environmental steps and job creating steps on the same program. New buildings matter as well. They're just we have to address old ones. And the good thing about some cities like Toronto is we've recognized that we've got to find ways to fight sprawl. And people, I think, disagree in Toronto reasonably about whether, you know, tall downtown buildings are the right way to do that or not. But at a minimum, what this does is bring people into downtown where they can be close to where they work. And that matters because you get people out of cars, on foot. New buildings tend to be built to higher environmental standards. And the most recent buildings, in Toronto's case at least, have to be built to our green buildings bylaw, which was a standard we set that at its heart is really about the amount of energy that will be used in a building. So you have to design it to minimize the amount of energy. It's like the LEED standard, but it's more substantive because it also talks about, you know, how you're located in relation to transit and so forth. So new buildings are really important. The good news there is the smartest developers of both commercial and residential buildings are realizing that people are prepared to pay a premium to live in a green building for a whole bunch of reasons. People like the cleaner air. They like carpets that don't have noxious emissions. They want to do the right thing, and it gives them, you know, the ability, if they live in a state-of-the-art green building or work in one, to say, I've put my money where my beliefs are. So Tridel and Minto on the residential side and all the commercial developers in downtown Toronto are now building buildings that minimize energy consumption, and they're state-of-the-art. And that's good news. The better news is there are a lot of technologies coming that can take us even further. Phoenix Energy in Vancouver, for example, is using horizontal drilling techniques that actually come from the oil industry to drill underground between existing buildings and create geothermal loops. And if you have condominiums near commercial buildings, their heating and cooling load is different. You know, people get up in the morning and have a shower. And then all this hot water, there's all this energy in the hot water. If you tap that off and connect to a geothermal loop and the commercial building is connected to that, people can literally use the heat from the showers in the morning, the waste heat, if the water runs down the drain, to heat the commercial building the rest of the day. And
wow.
These technologies are coming, and I'm actually quite bullish because those are market-based. Sometimes you need a little bit of a government subsidy here and there to get things going, and that's fine. I think that's exactly where the government should subsidize. But they are coming, and we can, I think, see a future fairly soon where we don't have to rely on electricity from a huge plant, you know, 100 miles away to heat and cool our buildings, that the vast majority of the heating and cooling can be done by mechanisms like that. You need a little bit of electricity to run the pumps, but much less than you electricity or gas that you need now to heat and cool buildings.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much. You've been very generous with your time. I have one final question for you, which I'm not sure how much you're going to be able to answer it, which is why I left it for last. So you can kind of say what you will about this. But just in a very general sense, I'm not going to ask you to make any specific comments about the political status in Toronto. But just in a very general sense, I guess, for advice for maybe a future Toronto or future Canadian elsewhere in Canada mayor who maybe, you know, will be becoming mayor over the next few years or when they grow up, if they're younger now. When you have a situation where, I mean, something you'd be very familiar with your term, shall we say, shifting priorities, both in the public and now that you've left office with a new government in place, how do you, I guess, promote and talk about, and most importantly, what I'm interested in is how do you sustain these types of programs when both the public and following administrations may have a different set of priorities than you?
Well, I think you have to make it clear to the people of Toronto, you know, and I was very lucky. People were with me on these issues. In 2006, I ran very explicitly on a very strong environmental campaign platform, and I got 60% of the vote. And you know, right till my final day as mayor, the work we were doing on environmental issues was massively popular, and people asked two things, for us to do more of it and for them to get personally involved. And the people will be behind you. And I think as an elected official, you can be brave. You know, sometimes on environmental issues, we have to say we've got to make an investment now. But over time, it always pays off. And it's for a very simple principle. What's bad for business is waste. What's bad for the environment is waste. And when you get rid of waste, it's good for the environment and good for the economy. And people understand that. They want to see the right thing done. But sometimes they're very busy. They're not experts. They don't know what the right thing is. And they look to elected officials who are in a leadership position to lead. And I don't think people should be afraid of leading. people will be behind you. They want to see things happen, and I certainly was very pleased in Toronto that we were able to make a whole range of initiatives happen. And you know, one of the nice things in my life, I get thanked for them every day. So it's been a real privilege, and that's my advice. If you want to run for office, be true to yourself, be brave, and be clear about what you want to do. People will be with you, and when you get elected, make it happen.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite pundits said something along the lines of, if you don't find like you have the people behind you, don't lower your expectations, make a better case.
That's great advice, and in a quite long-winded way, that's what I was trying to say.
So that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for joining us, David Miller.
Pleasure being on the show. Bye-bye.